Country with your host, Dave Woods. This is the radio show where country music gets up close and personal.
Spend some time in the country and get to know our guests. Spend some time in the country where the music's the best. The latest news and memories, two great stories that get told.
Welcome to another Triple Play special here on In the Country. I'm Dave Woods. Tonight on the show, Tim Magwood, Joanne Jansen, and Ty Bainton, three unique performers each sharing with us their latest music. First up, let's welcome Ontario's Tim Magwood. His sophomore album is called Endless Sky, featuring the current single, Windsor Arms. He co-wrote with 12 different Canadian writers on this album. His influences include Elton John, Johnny Reid, James Taylor, and Paul Simon. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Thanks, Dave.
Great to have you here.
It's great to be on tonight.
Now, the new album is called Endless Sky. It's your second album. Did you learn anything after doing the first one that you put in place when you were putting together Endless Sky?
Yeah, absolutely. First album, Zigzag Bridge, it actually took me 4 years to do Around the Edges. It was the first foray into music writing for me. And I worked with a guy by the name of Scotty Dibble, and he really helped me around songwriting, but he also really helped me with my own personal style. My background, I'm a trained singer-actor, and I did a lot of musical theater, so he kind of helped beat that out of me a little bit and really helped me find my own voice. So Endless Sky, I feel like it's really me. It represents who I am, and it feels really authentic and real. So, yeah, I learned a lot from the first album for sure.
So what's the difference with the approach to musical theater versus being an artist on an album? Something different with the way you use your voice and the way you present the songs?
Yeah, I'm actually classically trained. So I studied musical theater. I studied classical voice. I did dance. And so the thing about musical theater is that there's a certain technique. So it's a little bit more staged. It's a little more presented, it's a little more projected. That's musical
right.
theater, whereas my vibe now of alt country folk rock is a lot more just it's more storytelling, it's more natural in terms of the way I communicate. So it's actually quite different. I'm not trying as hard.
Yeah, you're not trying as hard, right? With this, it's a more intimate approach to a song.
Exactly.
What I like about your website at timmagwood.com is a lot of people will mention their influences, but you actually detailed what each influence meant to you in detail and some of the highlights of the songs, which I found really cool. Elton John is one of those influences. Johnny Reed's in there, James Taylor, and Dawn Langstroth as well, which is really cool. I've interviewed her in the past, and she has a great voice and a great sound.
Oh, she's amazing. I saw Dawn, for those of your listeners who don't know Dawn, she's the daughter of Anne Murray. And I saw her at Hughes Room a couple of years ago. It was for a Neil Young tribute. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but they do. Mike Roth produces a Neil Young tribute every year where there's a whole bunch of artists that cover Neil Young songs. And I heard her sing, and I just actually talking about it now gives me goosebumps. She has one of the most natural, beautiful, resonant voices I've ever heard. I was just really impressed by her music and her communication and her style. I just loved it.
Yeah, she's awesome. Now, one of those, the other influences, one of them is James Taylor. So I can barely name a favorite song of his because I have so many, but Fire and Rain is definitely up there. And I understand that's one that you like to perform too.
Yeah, Fire and Rain is actually one of the very first songs I learned how to play on the guitar. An old camp friend of mine, a guy by the name of Jamie Campbell, I went to a camp called Kilku Camp, which is up in the Minden, Haliburton area in Ontario, and we went to this, a whole bunch of us went camping, and he brought his guitar, and he taught me Fire and Rain, and that really ignited a real passion and interest for me and James Taylor and storytelling and his writing, and I just always loved his style, his really easygoing vibe.
Yeah, it feels really intimate, the songs he sings and writes, and the songs really move you. They're not, I was going to say commercial, but they're not, you know, crafted. They're very just inspired, I feel, when I listen to them.
Well, inspired. You used another word there, crafted. I think the best songs are crafted. And as my good friend and colleague Scotty Dibble says, you know, Tim, songwriting is like being an archaeologist. It's about digging and a lot of times there's an inspiration for a song, but
right.
that may stay true or it might evolve into something else. And I think that James
yeah.
Taylor is one of those guys who really is true to the sound, true to the story. He's simple. He doesn't try to complexify. He makes it. He's a real simple, nice, simple writer. He's great.
Right. Exactly. And that word craft, I mean, you do need, as you said, songwriting is a craft, and you have to keep it within certain boundaries. But at the same time, guys like James Taylor, maybe even Leonard Cohen can break some of the rules, and that can really be kind of cool when a song is done that way too.
Well, yeah, and to that point, I think sometimes as songwriters we can overthink, and we need to listen to where the song wants to go, you know. So, sure, there's verse, there's chorus, maybe there's a bridge. Sometimes as a writer we say, okay, now where's the bridge? And that's
right.
That sort of cerebral thought rather than it feels like it needs to shift gears or do something. So I think songwriting comes from much more of a place of feeling rather
yes.
than thinking. I think if you get into the thinking mode too much, then it's not real.
Great point. In January of 2011 is when you started to think about this album and sort of prepare for it, and you decided to go with 12 Canadian writers, which is amazing. I mean, some people have two or three co-writers, but you actually worked with 12 different writers. How did that idea come about, and how did that process work?
Well, I'm an entrepreneur, and I'm also a singer-songwriter. And I sold my business at the end of 2010 after building it for 10 years. And I was at the beginning of my journey of being a songwriter. And I thought, you know what? I want to collaborate with some great writers. And somewhat selfishly, I want to learn from others. So I want to really accelerate my learning curve as a songwriter. And I thought that a great way to do that would be to work with others. So I had a great opportunity to work with folks like Bruce Good of the Good Brothers. I wrote a couple songs with him. I met Melanie Doan through a common friend. So I wrote a song with Melanie Doan and David Martin, who does a lot of writing in Nashville. You know, I was introduced to Liam Titcomb, and Liam is, you know, from the Titcomb family, a really well-respected sort of folk rock group, young guy. So I was able to connect with, make friends with, and write music with a lot of great Canadian songwriters. And it's about the end result, but it's also about the process for me of really learning about how others write and some tips and tricks. So it was a vision of collaborating with 12 great, and it was also about learning through the process.
Was there any approach that any of them had that surprised you or seemed a different approach, although effective, but somebody have maybe something outside of the box writing style?
One guy who, actually the song that you're going to play, I think, is Windsor Arms, which is my first
yep.
single. This guy, Dan Medakovich, who I co-wrote Windsor Arms with, who I also co-wrote Last December with. Both of those songs are based, Last December is really fictional. Windsor Arms is based on an experience or a story he had. He really pushed me around using my imagination and using my right brain. I sometimes get too literal with songwriting, and I think
right.
that gets in the way. Dan and also Scott Dibble, both those guys have been really helpful for me to just let the imagination go, and if there's a kernel of an idea, then let it unwind and reveal itself to you rather than being too rational or analytical about it. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I do a bit of songwriting myself, and of course I study other songs, and I understand there is that part where you can be too logical about it and almost rewrite a song too much where it can make too much sense, but there is a free flow to songwriting. It's something intangible, I think, that ends up in a song.
Yeah, like Dan, for example, with Windsor Arms, I had a melodic idea. I had no idea what the story was going to be. He told me a story about how he was at the Windsor Arms, staying at this beautiful, ornate hotel in downtown Toronto. There was a guitar on the wall. of the hotel, beautiful place. He was feeling horrible. He had a really bad flu, had the chills, and couldn't enjoy the hotel room or the environs. So the song is all about the irony of being in a beautiful place and not being able to enjoy it. And so I had a melodic idea. He just sort of told me that story, and I thought that was kind of cool. And we kind of, it was part fiction, part nonfiction in terms of what the story is of that song. So it was based on a story, but we kind of had some fun with it and turned it around a little bit and made it somewhat fiction as well.
Now, when I was listening to the song, it definitely has a feel in it of Blue Rodeo, Jim Cuddy kind of sound. Is he an influence, a later influence in life?
Yeah, he is, for sure. You know, it's interesting you say later influence, because it's funny how, I don't know if you can relate, how you come to music, some music later. Like Blue Rodeo, I never really liked Blue Rodeo as a kid, or, you know, in the 80s, early 90s, when most people did. But all of a sudden, I heard some of their stuff 5-6 years ago, and I was like, where's Blue Rodeo been for my whole life? So, and I really got into Blue Rodeo and really took a, it was probably because of my new passion of songwriting, and I really appreciate Greg Keeler for his craftsmanship. And I've had the privilege of actually opening for the Jim Cuddy Band a couple times at a big charity event in Mulmer. And actually, Jim Cuddy's fiddle player, Ann Lindsay, played in my opening, my launch of the revival a couple weeks ago. So to answer your question, Blue Rodeo, yes, an influence. I love their sound, love their feel. And some people have told me there's a bit of Blue Rodeo in my sound. That's a nice compliment.
Yeah, I can definitely hear that. Is there a song, whether it's one of your own, Tim, or a cover song you do, because your voice really can evoke an emotion and is quite moving, is there a particular song you do that moves you the most out of any song you sing, one that almost chokes you up as you perform it?
That's a good question. You know, the one that comes to mind immediately is a song, On Endless Sky. It's a tune called Smiling Down. That is a song that came to me in a dream. I had a really vivid dream about my grandparents. It was about a year and a half after they passed away, and it was a really vivid dream. It was when they were younger, like in their mid-50s. I was having a conversation with them, and what they were doing in my dream is they were validating my choice of pursuing music and making me feel all right about it. And I woke up, and I had a melodic idea. It was very vivid. I had some initial lyrical ideas. I called my friend David Martin, and we wrote it in a couple of sessions. But so when I sing that, it's very much for me reflecting on those that are smiling down for me, like my grandparents. And I know that it can connect with most people, because most people have a grandfather or a mom or a dad or a loved one that's passed on that they know is smiling down. So that tune, for sure, for me, is a real emotional one.
Yeah, it's amazing how country music and music just that puts lyrics up front can be such a comfort to listeners. It's you know, it's written from a cathartic place from an artist like yourself. But as listeners, we can hear it and we can find ourselves in that song and, you know, take some comfort in it and find some healing in it as well.
I hope so.
Now, the Moonshine Cafe, and we talked about that before you came on the show. It's one of the venues that you're going to be performing at, and there's a ton of them that you will be. What is it like performing live, and how do you enjoy that, getting out and performing your songs in front of a crowd?
Well, I'm a born performer. I mean, I started performing in theater when I was 10. I always sang in choirs. I was in musical theater. I did musical theater professionally. And I just love performing. I mean, I can't do it enough. So I just get a real charge from it. I love to connect with the audience. I love to sing, but I also love to tell stories. I love the Moonshine Cafe in Oakville on February 28th. It's a great little intimate spot. John's got there. And I'm also doing a gig for those people that are listening in the Collingwood area, February 22nd at the Casbah, which is a new spot in Collingwood on Huron Street.
Excellent. Our listeners can check out all the tour dates at timmegwood.com. The sophomore album, your second one, is called Endless Sky with some great songs on it, including Windsor Arms. You told us a bit about it before, sort of the inspiration behind it, a bit of fiction and a bit of fact in it. We're going to play it in a moment. Tim, maybe tell us a bit about being in the studio and recording it. Did the song come a little more to life after you heard it produced and all the magic that happened in the studio?
Yeah, it's funny how certain colors really make the song come to life, and I love the song. Just it was written actually on a mandolin, and so you can hear that there's a definite distinct mandolin sound, particularly at the front end. But what really for me, I was like, wow, this is really a real song now, is when Drew Jerica laid down the fiddle track. So I think when you listen to the song, the there's the mandolin, there's some really nice gritty guitar work by Travis Good of the Sadies. Some nice rich backups from Melanie Doan. But, I mean, one of my favorite pieces of this is a fiddle by Drew, and I'm really thrilled what he was able to lay down for us.
Awesome. Well, we're about to share the song. Thanks so much for being a part of the show, Tim. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks, Dave. Great chatting with you. Hope to see you at a show soon.
Look forward to that. This is Tim Megwood and Windsor Arms on this In the Country Triple Play Special.
Load in, load out, each town is a blur on a winding road. Sleep on the coach, being carried away, destination unknown. It goes on and on like this. Sitting here in the Windsor Arms, not an ounce of comfort to be found. Lying awake at this ungodly hour, here alone in the Windsor Arms. But I'd rather on the stage, smile and wave, just let it go. Gotta give them a show. This room's so small, used to play in concert halls, but those days are gone. It goes on and on like this. Sitting here in the Windsor Arms, not an ounce of comfort to be found. Lying awake at this ungodly hour, here alone in the Windsor Arms. But I'd rather be lying in the door, used to get a lot more. Pay off the band, not much left in my hand, but I'll soon be in your arms. It goes on and on like this. Sitting here in the Windsor Arms, not an ounce of comfort to be found. lying awake at the dumb god we out. Here alone in Windsor arms, but I'd rather be lying in yours.
And that's Tim Megwood with Windsor Arms on this In the Country Triple Play special. Now it's time to welcome Joanne Jansen, originally from Australia, now calling Alberta home. Her CD is entitled Sad Circus, featuring the new single, You Take Me Home. Welcome to the show, Joanne.
Oh, thank you very much. Glad to be here with you guys.
Yeah, great to have you here. We had a great talk with Tim. Looking forward to speaking with you about the CD Sad Circus. So what's it like moving from Australia to Leduc, Alberta?
Well, I've been here for about 12 years. So I got used to it, but a little bit. But I think I'm just about like every other Canadian, where the winter is the hardest time of year, definitely to get through. But you know, it in the beginning I was very homesick. I have to admit, I grew up on the coast, so it's very different to be in the prairies with
right.
no coastland. But and I miss my family because my entire family's back home: mom, sister, everybody, my immediate family. But you know, Alberta is a beautiful place to live, so I can't complain. It's been good to me. I've made some really good friends here and became a Canadian, so I'm both Canadian and Australian now. I get the best of both worlds.
That's awesome. Now, of course,
yeah.
When you think about country music in Australia, one name that comes to mind is Keith Urban. He's a pretty big import from Australia.
He sure is. You know, I was thinking about this the other day, and I think the first time I heard of Keith Urban, he was about 17 years old, and he was in a band that was touring the Queensland coast. And the band was called Rusty and the Ayers Rockettes. and I think they were named after the Ayers Rock or something, but it was a rock band. And at that time, he was playing guitar, just playing guitar, not singing. And I don't know how long he spent in that band, but he was good then. Like, he was an amazing player then. So I wasn't surprised, I guess, when he came out. But I was a little surprised that he came out as a solo artist.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't that in Australia. He was a guitar player. So even more amazed when he came out with this, like, amazing album out of
Nashville. Oh, yeah. Just
Nashville,
took the country by storm, literally. And I think he was with the group first for a little bit before the Ranch.
The Ranch, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Quickly became solo. Now, one of your influences, and I'm sure there's others, and I'll ask you about those, but your dad's musical talent spurred you on to pursue this too.
Yeah, it really did. My dad's been a musician my whole life. I think he started probably around age 16 or 17 as well. And he toured in a rock band. I think rock was pretty big back then. And as it still is now, but he was touring in like a great cover band. And I think from the time I was in grade 2 to grade 6, he was touring for like 4 years throughout that time. So I sort of, you know, I grew up with it, and I remember being in the dance halls and listening to him play. And I remember the time at which he moved over to country, and the whole band started playing country music, and I just thought, oh, that's really cool. I really like that, you know, music, because
right.
I was used to this. And back then it was like, you know, Beatles rock. It was stuff like that. It wasn't, you know, really heavy rock music or anything like that. But
yeah, exactly.
I was definitely influenced. Even now, sometimes I'll throw songs into my sets that I don't even know I know all the words to. Like recently somebody requested Help Me Make It Through the Night, and that was one that my dad used to sing at the end of, you know, just about every night at 2 a.m.
Oh, sure. Great Chris Christopherson song as far as a writer.
Chris Christopherson song, yeah. And here I just managed to play it and sing it and have never done it in a set, and it's probably because I heard it, you know, a few hundred times when I was a kid. So
that's amazing.
I have got my dad to thank.
Yeah, we hear a lot of songs when we're a kid, and sometimes we grow up and we think, well, we're not a fan of that music or that artist, but we know every word to the song. It's in our subconscious.
It really is, and it's amazing how I can't remember what I did 5 minutes ago, but I've got, you know, thousands of song lyrics in my head, so
that's right.
I always laugh about that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing when an artist, it's something I guess everybody takes for granted, but, you know, an artist knows all these words to all these different songs. Is it memorized because there's a melody to it, so it kind of flows? It's not like memorizing a speech?
You know, I think the melody is a big part, but for me, I'm really big on lyrics. So if it's a story song, I'll always remember the song because of the story, because, you know, it makes sense to me and where it goes.
Right.
And like The Gambler, you know?
Yeah,
it's
I love
like
Kenny.
All. Yeah, and you're like, I can never forget the words of that song, because to me it's a story from start to finish, and
right.
and that's how it is. But I think I've only had one time where I've literally could not remember lyrics on stage, and it's pretty embarrassing. So, you know, you go home and you study them, and when we practice a lot, so that helps too.
Now, when I was checking out your website, joannejanson.com, one of the covers that you do on there is a great Joni Mitchell song called River. It is so beautiful, and your version of it's great. What is it about that song, Joanne, that appeals to you?
Oh, I love Joni Mitchell. I love Joni Mitchell music. I just think it's so authentic, and so, like, there's so much honesty in her songwriting. And
yeah.
I actually became a fan of that song because Sarah McLachlan had brought it out. And I was actually listening to the Sarah McLachlan version and then realized it was a Joni Mitchell song.
Oh, okay, great.
And then realized that's why I liked it so much, because I love Joni Mitchell's music. you know, like I do Big Yellow Taxi and songs like that in my sets all the time when I do covers. I just think she's just an unbelievable... Not only does she have an unbelievable story, Joni Mitchell, but she came from a place where she didn't know anything other than just to be natural and be herself.
Right.
And those songs, like, I love those types of really simple melodies that are really heartfelt. And The River,
yes.
like, that's a really heartfelt song. And it's not like a traditional Christmas song, you know. And I guess I could relate to it a little bit in the winter and stuff. So, I love that song. That's definitely Joni Mitchell's a big influence, too, on songwriting for me.
Now, the name of your CD is called Sad Circus. Can you give us some insight into the title and what that means about the album or about any part of your life?
Yeah, for sure. Sad Circus was it wasn't planned that way. Let's just say we weren't gonna call it Sad Circus in the beginning. I wrote for the album and then had chosen a few songs as well. And after the first 7 songs, we in the recording studio we sort of joked that there was this recurring theme. That came about with circus lyrics, like walking on a high wire and there's no net to catch you, and we're talking about a clown in one song, and there was like this melody. And so we were joking, saying, and we were actually joking the whole time, saying, it's such wonderfully painful music, you know, because my
producer, yeah.
you know, because sometimes we get a little serious as artists and it's like,
sure.
you know, it's wonderful, but it's just a little bit painful, right? So he said, it's like a sad circus. And he was kind of joking at the time. And so when we wrote I had my very last writing session, we wrote a song called Everybody Knows Better. And my co-writer and I decided that we were going to put the word sad circus in the first line of the song. Jokingly, we thought it was going
right.
to be a joke.
Right.
And we were going to go play it for my producer, and he was going to say, what are you guys doing, you know? We had it all planned, right? So we wrote it, took it to the producer, and he said, I love it. I absolutely love it. He said, you can change the rest of the song, but, you know, I like
gotta,
that line.
Got to keep that line. I
yeah,
love it because
so we
it's,
did. Yeah.
it's
yeah,
got the alliteration, so, sad circus, so it rolls off the tongue nicely, but it's such a nice contrast. It paints an image because circuses are normally happy, but sad circus, it's great.
Well, and, you know, like, to be honest, the line is so authentic that it fits my life. I'm a mom of 2 little girls, 9 and 6 years old, and I'm busy touring and all the time working at this full time. So, honestly, I feel like a clown sometimes. And I always say that I'm always juggling, you know, juggling schedules, juggling, you know, to make everything happen. So... It did come from that place too, that you know, we some people maybe don't understand, you know, why I do what I do or this lifestyle, I guess you could say, but I'm very lucky that I have a husband who's full into it and fully supportive, and kids who are amazingly well adjusted. And you know, it does take a lot of juggling. It is a little bit like a circus act to get through the week sometimes. So I can, you know, it kind of fit me. So
that's awesome. I also like that idea of coming up with, you know, a word maybe somebody throws out or a phrase and putting it into a song. It's kind of like a songwriting game, but it can lead to a great song. So they say, okay, use a song with this in it, and kind of gets the creative juices flowing.
Yeah, and it's not usually how I would write something, you know, but it came so easily. Honestly, the first line came out so easily, and I wrote with a buddy of mine named Aaron Jake Goodwin, who's an amazing songwriter.
Right.
And he just came out with it, and we both came out with it at the same time, almost the exact same line with, you know, give or take a word or two, and we just went, yeah, that's it, you know, that's exactly what we're trying to say. So it worked, and it's great when it works like that, because sometimes it doesn't. So
yeah, exactly.
It's a good feeling.
Because I've talked to some artists and songwriters who say, you know, there are those songs that come in 30 minutes or an hour fairly quickly, but those can be the exception, because a lot of times it's a lot of struggle, or even just to get that initial idea that's worth completing in a song.
Absolutely, and you know, that's the one thing I've realized this year for myself is that in 2012 and the beginning of 2013, I've been so busy touring and had so much to do that it's been really hard to write a song, because I haven't had the time to really relax into it and be clear
right.
in my thoughts. Yeah, so I mean, I think my last song, and I'm usually writing all the time, but I think my last song, it probably took me 2 months to write it, because when I did get a chance to sit down, I just wasn't clear. So you get a real feeling for, especially the bigger artists out there who are super busy, how they sort of why they take time off to write their next albums. And I think that's why they do it, because they need to be away from things a little bit just to have time to think. So that can really play a role as well. And definitely when your creative juices are flowing and that song comes in 30 minutes or, you know, that's a really good feeling, because I was very frustrated for a couple of months there, thinking, you know, and I finally finished that song last week, and I was like, oh, thank goodness, I've got a song, you know.
That's a great feeling. Now,
yeah.
As far as duet partners go, and I like to ask a lot of my guests this question, is there somebody out there, whether it's somebody at the top of the charts or just a favorite of yours, but a duet partner you would like to partner up with to sing a song and put on one of your records down the road?
Well, you've already mentioned one guy, and that's Keith Urban.
Right.
I just love his energy on stage. He's so connected to the music, you know, physically, I guess, and mentally. But I have another one, and I have always wanted to be not even just duet, but just have a coffee with this guy, and that's Willie Nelson. And
oh, cool.
I don't know why, but I've always had this. I just would love to meet him, and you know, sing a song would be great. So yeah, definitely Willie Nelson.
Love Willie Nelson. I bet he'd have some great stories. It was my dad's birthday the other day, and I bought him one of the gifts was a Willie Nelson double CD set with tons of his songs. I mean, he has so many incredible songs.
He does. He really does. Yeah. And, you know, he's getting older and older, and I'm like, you know, I bet he does have some great stories, and I love hearing that stuff. I had a really cool experience in Nashville when I recorded this album. I was recording out of a studio that was owned by Steve Cropper. And Steve Cropper is one of the Blues Brothers. He was the guitarist in the Blues Brothers. And he wrote Sitting on the Dock of the Bay with Otis Redding and, you know, all these big hits and stuff. And to sit with him and listen to his stories of all of the people that, you know, and he toured with Kris Kristofferson and all these great people is amazing. I mean, these guys have so much knowledge, not only musically, but historically of music, that it was really cool to sit, you know, and get that from him. So I'm sure Willie Nelson would have some amazing stories to tell me.
No doubt. Good, bad, and the ugly, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
Now, we're going to turn to your song in a moment, Joanne, called You Take Me Home. It's from your CD, Sad Circus. And I want you to tell us a bit about the song. I know it's based on a true story. And also tied into this, at your website, there's a contest that people can enter to win a dream vacation to Australia.
There is. I'm very excited about this. Very, very excited. Well, I wrote the song actually for my husband. That's what I tend to do. I'm much better at talking through a song than I am at sitting down and talking about things.
Right.
So a couple of years ago, we'd had this very serious, it was a very serious conversation, and it kind of surprised me that he was feeling guilty that I was here for so, you know, I've been here for 12 years away from my family, and I was a little bit shocked that he felt so bad about it. I mean, I'm not really homesick. I love my life, everything, you know, and so I just wanted to tell him in a song, I guess, that it's okay. For me, the meaning is wherever we are is home. It doesn't matter where we are. You take me home, meaning you take me home, you know, to our house, to our life, in a sense where you make me feel at home, that sort of stuff.
Right. Yeah.
And we went to write it, and I was writing with my buddy, Aaron Jake Goodwood, again in Nashville, and at the last minute we had a special, I guess, co-writer come in, and his name was Chase Rice. And Chase actually co-wrote Florida Georgia Line's Cruise, the song Cruise.
Oh, I love that song.
It's like it's like a big deal. Well, Chase actually was a runner-up of Survivor Nicaragua. He actually was like, he almost won Survivor and had just gotten off Survivor.
Yep.
So we were talking about this island theme, and so the three of us came up with this concept, and he had just come off, you know, living on an island and stuff. So we wanted it to be a very beachy kind of a sounding song that still get the point across. So I wrote it for my husband. My husband's often embarrassed that I'm currently constantly writing about us. but you know, it's the only way I know how. So that's what that's about.
And so this contest for this great song, Dream Vacation to Australia, it's through your website, joannejanson.com?
It is, both through my website and through Facebook, either one. You can find my Facebook fan page just by typing in Joanne Jansen as well. And you just go on there, and we've hooked up with Maritime Travel, and I've never toured in Australia, so I'm getting to tour there in April, and I wanted to do something really special to end. You know, ever since I've moved here to Canada, almost every few weeks I have somebody tell me, you know, that's my dream vacation. I would love to go to Australia. And it finally hit me one day that I grew up in one of the most beautiful places on the planet.
Yeah.
And I wanted to share that with someone, you know. So we're asking for people to put in a very short video to say why they want to go. And because I really want this, you know, we've been working really hard at bringing this, and I really want to give it to somebody who really wants to go. And really maybe might not, you know, always have a chance to do that. So, just go there and put in the entry by March 1st. And I would love to see those videos coming in.
That's awesome. That's very, very exciting. We'll encourage our listeners to do that. Head over to your website, joannejanson.com, last name J-N-Z-E-N. Thanks so much for being part of the show, Joanne. We're going to share the song in a moment. I just want to thank you so much for sharing these great stories.
Well, thank you, Dave. Thank you for your support. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. This is Joanne Jansen, and you take me home on this In the Country Triple Play Special.
You came along and stole my heart.
And that's Joanne Jansen with You Take Me Home. The Triple Play continues now with Ontario country artist Ty Bainton, whose musical influences range from Hank Williams Sr. to Eric Church. His latest single is called Canadian Country Boy. Welcome to the show, Ty.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here, and great to meet you a few weeks back at a songwriting night.
Yeah, that was a pretty by-chance meeting.
It was. It's a small world. Well, great to have you hooked up here, and we did all the guests tonight through Lauren Tutty, who's connected to all of you tonight. So what's it like having Lauren on your side in the music business?
Oh, she's fantastic. Her and I met out in Saskatoon last year for the Canadian Country Music Awards, and just had a great time meeting her and talking with her, and when it came time to release this next single, called her up and got on board with her, and she's been doing phenomenal work for me so far. So, Lauren, if you're listening, thank you very much.
Awesome. And, of course, as I mentioned, your influences, and I remember from that night you did a Hank Sr. song, you did Keith Whitley, Randy Travis, so you definitely do a lot of the new stuff, but it was really cool because sometimes you think, okay, not everybody remembers, and you're a lot younger than I, and yet you love that older country music.
Well, growing up, my Grandma Mary always had 820 Cham on, and
right.
And back then they were still playing a bunch of the older songs, but also she has one of those giant dresser size record players in the basement and has a lot of these old records. So I kind of subconsciously grew up listening to all that, and you know, going through high school, I listened to Matchbox 20 and Sum 41 and all those bands like everyone else at the time.
Sure.
But when I started songwriting and playing guitar, I really started focusing on the lyrics and more acoustic style stuff. And naturally, I was drawn to country from that, but not only, I mean, the fact that my voice is more country. But when I got into the writing process and looking at the chord structures I was playing, I started noticing similarities between that and all the older songs. So I started going back and learning all these older songs and connecting with all them, and it's cool to look at the evolution of songwriting from the 1920s to present day, and I find I'm still pulling influences from all those older songs.
I mean, you can't beat Hank Sr. for songwriting. So many classic songs. I mean, he died at the age of 29, and yet he left behind such a body of work and just so many songs that really sum up exactly what you know, what he set out to do. Like, I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry. When you hear that, you're hearing somebody who is, you know, very lonely and in a sad place in life.
Yeah, I think the thing that Hank Sr. did so well is you look at the time period he was writing, and no one really talked about that stuff. No one talked about marriage troubles or the issues going on at home. So to have someone come out and be openly singing and talking about it all, I think really connected with people. And
yeah.
And I think at the base level, that's what a song's got to do. You got to be able to relate to it.
Now, if we fast forward, Ty, so we've got Hank Sr. in the past and many others, as we mentioned. Currently, I know you did a Florida Georgia Line song that night, but who are some of your favorites in today's country world?
Oh, man, there's so many of them. you know, Eric Church, Luke Bryan, Jason Aldean. I find, you know, I grew up listening to 820 Cham in that country, but my mom and dad always had the classic rock on. So, of course, I grew up with, you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd and all those tunes. So I find in my music, it's kind of a mix of that rock and country, which I'm finding with Jason Aldean and Eric Church.
Sure.
A little bit more similarities between what I'm doing, but in all honesty, a lot of the artists I'm really appreciating aren't necessarily artists. It's the people behind them who are writing the songs for them. That
yeah,
I'm always curious.
Yeah, not everybody discovers that. Even artists themselves don't always get hooked on the songwriters who may not be names, but like famous names, but write the songs. So who would those examples be?
Oh, there's Bob DiPiero, there's Craig Wiseman, Jeffrey Steele. There's so many of them. I had the opportunity a few years back at Falls View Casino in Niagara. They had a songwriter's night, and it was all the hit songwriters from Nashville. And they were basically sitting in a circle with their acoustic guitars, and they'd tell the story behind the song they wrote, and they'd play it. And some of the stories were just absolutely hilarious, but it really got me in touch with, you know, you listen to a song, and you're wondering, okay, what was the influence behind this? And I find whenever I go to learn a new song, I'm looking on YouTube for a live acoustic version from the original songwriter because I want to hear the story behind it.
Yeah.
And to me, if you know the story behind the song, you can connect to it a lot better. So in a lot of my live shows, especially when I'm introducing my songs, I'll tell people the story behind it. And I've had so many people come up to me afterwards and go, oh, yeah, that story you told, like, you know, I was at that show, or I have parties like that at my house, or the same thing happened to me. And I find that it's that connection that, I guess, intrigues me with a lot of the songs.
So true. I mean, I'm the same way. I like getting books on stories behind the songs, going to the songwriters thing, because, yeah, it brings that much more depth to the song. That you love the song, but now you know how they wrote it, maybe even how long it took them to have somebody else record it, because a lot of times we hear these songs, but it took a while for the right artist to get the song and record it.
Well, for instance, you look at Dust on the Bottle by David Lee Murphy.
Yeah,
number one hit in 1995. That song was written in the 80s and sat on a shelf for, I think, 7 years before someone picked it up. So, I mean, and I mean, I know as an artist on my tracks, I write every single one of my own, of all of my own songs. Not that I'm opposed to writing someone or cutting someone else's. I just apparently have a lot of stuff I want to say. But, you know, even with my music, and to a degree I have my own recording studio and have access to jump in whenever I want, it still takes months, even a year and a bit, to get the songs not just recorded but released. You know, I wrote a song maybe a month ago called Bonfires Glow with a good buddy of mine, Steve Rivers, who I'm pretty sure you know as well.
I do, yeah.
And
great writer.
Yeah, and we wrote it and in about 20 minutes, and both of us are like, this is an awesome song, and I'm cutting it on my album that should be due out in the summer. But I already know it's not going to be on radio until next summer, just the way things go. So it's funny to think that, you know, you put this down and it's done and it's complete, but it's not going to get out until another year later, and I'm sure that's the case with a lot of songs.
It's a real waiting game in that sense, isn't it? I mean, there's the reference to the same with Christmas songs in the sense of they record it in July and it's December. But a hit song, you're right, they could record it and it may not see the light of day for you know, 6-7 months, and then it might not be the first single. So, you know, hit songs kind of lay low for a while.
Well, and I find a hit song, so much of that hinges on which artists recorded it. You look at Amarillo by Morning by George Strait. I don't think it hit number one. I think it hit number three for him in the 80s. But it was originally written in the 70s and recorded by three or four other artists and did okay on the charts, but it wasn't until he got his hands on it that it went where it was supposed to be. And I know I've written countless songs, and they're pretty good songs. And in the back of my mind, I'm going, I will never record this as myself because it's not a song that suits my style. But it would be perfect for someone else. And it's interesting to have that perspective on things because
I get
the same thing from some of my friends, and I'm sure you've had that experience because you write as well, that sometimes you put a song down and it just resonates with you and you're like, yeah, I want to sing this. This is what I want to do. And then there's other songs and you're like, yeah, I like the song, but, you know, so-and-so would do this so much better, or there should be a female vocalist singing this.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a different perspective on things, I find.
It is. It's kind of cool, and I've talked to writers about that before, the fact that as a writer, you can get into different, headspaces. So maybe you're writing a song about being a real rebel. It's a great song, but that's not who you are as an artist, maybe not even as a person. But you could write that song, so now you're going to pitch it to Gretchen Wilson, say. So it's kind of cool that, you know, a writer can, you know, it's not always about, it's a true experience, but it's not always a song for your voice.
Exactly, yeah. And I find, especially when I play with other guitar players, and you notice that at the Songwriters Night, I play with my guitar tuned to full step down because my voice is that much lower. And it's funny because in the band that I usually perform with, who come out and accompany me, I'm a full step down. My other guitar player is a half step, and my lead guitar player is in regular tuning. And I had a buddy of mine who's a very good guitar player come up to me after the show, and he goes, "What in the world were you boys playing? None of you were playing the same thing. Someone's capo was on the 4th fret, someone's on the 7th. And he couldn't figure it out. But it's interesting how everybody has their own writing style and where they like to write.
Yeah, and there's no right or wrong. I mean, at the end of the day, if you come up with a great song, whether you started with the title, the lyrics first, the melody, however you stumble upon a great song is an okay way to do it.
Yeah, and I find for me, so much of it is, and I always like to use the line that I've not once ever sat down with the intention of writing a song. It's usually 3 a.m. and I can't sleep. And I'll pick up the guitar and just start singing about whatever happened the last week or what's happening looking out my window at that exact time. And most of the songs that I wind up going to the studio to record end up being written in about 20 minutes. But then you always wind up with those bits and pieces of songs that you're like, that part's really, really good, but I don't want to force finishing to write it. And, you know, you've been sitting on it for a year or two and nothing's really come of it, but you know that particular part has to be done with something. And those are the cases where I'll sit down with someone else and be like, hey, I got this really cool idea here. Can you help me finish it? And that's where me and Steve will sit down and write, or me and someone else, and usually, you know, over the next hour or two, we've flushed that song out, and now I have another song that I'm really happy to go in to record. But I find there's some songs you're meant to finish by yourself, and then there's other ones where, you know, you've got a piece of that idea, but until you bring someone else's perspective in, you're not going to get the complete story of what that song is supposed to be.
Exactly, yeah, you need that other writer and their thoughts. And it is cool, too, also, too, it's great to write on your own, but when you're sharing a song with somebody, now you're on a journey together to see where that song's going to go, and you got somebody else to get excited with it about.
Yeah, exactly, and it's interesting to get their perspective on things because, you know, you start writing a song and you think it's about one thing, and then you add one line in or two words even, and now that song has a whole new meaning.
Right.
And it's cool to see that progress in the writing process.
Yeah, it keeps you guessing, and it's a surprise to you as writers because that next line leads you somewhere else. I want to talk, too, about a big show I was reading about online. Chelsea Kreitz is doing a show at Hamilton Place, a great Ontario country artist, and you're going to be opening up for her.
Yeah, I was playing the guitar, oddly enough, in the recording studio, and her manager got in touch with me on Facebook, and I guess Chelsea had gone on my website and heard some of my music and really wanted me to come open, so I really appreciate the vote of confidence from her, and I'm really looking forward to playing that show. Her and I actually haven't met in person yet.
Okay.
We're trying to line something up where one of us can get out to the other one's show before then and you know, have a drink or two and get to know each other, but yeah, it should be a lot of fun. You know, Hamilton Place, the first concert I ever went to was at Hamilton Place, and I saw Stompin' Tom.
Oh, cool.
So I'm pretty happy about that. A lot of my friends, you know, their first concert was the Foo Fighters or something like that, and I just say,
right,
I saw Stompin' Tom.
Sudbury Saturday night.
Exactly.
Among others.
Walks on stage with this piece of plywood.
That is awesome. Great to have those memories. And 820 Cham was also a station that I grew up listening to. And, I mean, for years and years, and that's where I got a lot of my, you know, love of country music from, is the songs they played.
Yeah, and the cool thing for me is when they were still a country station last year, I had the pleasure of getting on with Mike Nabors and played a few songs live and had an interview and got my current single at the time, which was Out Here on the Farm, played on the radio. So it was really, really nice for me to be able to have my music played on the station I grew up listening to.
Yeah, that is really special. Let's turn to the song we're going to share now called Canadian Country Boy, which you are indeed, Ty. And can you tell us about the song and the writing on it and any story about it?
Well, you know, I grew up playing, and still do to a large degree, at little bars all over Ontario. And a lot of the sets, it's, you know, you're playing for 4 hours and mostly cover songs, and you mix in the odd originals here and there. But my set list is over about 250 songs. And, of course, after learning so many country songs, you know, most of them are about Georgia or Tennessee or Texas or wherever, and they're all fantastic songs. And the one night my buddy and I were sitting around, and I said, yeah, they're all cool songs, but, you know, like, I'm a Canadian country boy. Like, we got to write something about that. And, you know, we started talking about playing pond hockey and that the Molson Canadian commercial that, you know, you've grown a beard in the playoff and curved your hockey stick with a blowtorch and all that stuff. And we were just joking around. And then that night at 3 in the morning, of course, everyone in my house was sleeping. So I grabbed my guitar and went out on the front porch. And it just kind of all came out in about 20 minutes. And I had actually written the first verse and the chorus and couldn't think of anything else. So I went back up and lied down to go to bed. And then instantly the second verse just popped into my head, and I was going in to do a band rehearsal because we were going to go in and re-record Born in the Country, which was another single off my first EP. And while we were in that session, we were having a bit of trouble getting everyone on the same page with the tempo and the beat. And my drummer said, hey, you said you wrote a song about 2 days ago. And I said, yeah. And he said, well, play it. So I started playing it, and about, you know, halfway through the first verse, everybody just kind of jumped in, and by the time we got to the end of the song, we're all looking at each other going, all right, we're recording this one. And as a joke, my lead guitar player, played the first three notes of O Canada at the very end of the song, and we all looked at each other instantly. We're like, that has to be in the final recording. So if you listen to the lead guitar solo at the end of the song, it plays the first couple notes of O Canada.
I love it. That adds so much to the song, too. Ty, it's been such a pleasure having you on the show, talking about your career and about to share the song. Thanks for being part of the show.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. This is Ty Benton and Canadian Country Boy here on this In the Country Triple Play special. And that's Ty Benton with Canadian Country Boy. That'll wrap up this In the Country Triple Play special. A big thank you to my guests, Tim Megwood, Joanne Jansen, and Ty Benton for being here on the show. Until next time, keep it country. I'm Dave Woods.